This is Michelle, and welcome to Raising Your Consciousness. This is a space to raise your consciousness and reach your full spiritual potential, and that's through spiritual, esoteric, and even magical practices. This is a space to bring happiness and meaning back into your life. Let's get started. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Michelle Thompson, and we are going to be talking about as above, so below. I'm sure you guys have heard the saying before, and you know, I was really kind of thinking about this when I was talking to one of my proctors. I was like, you know, how do you explain this? Like, what exactly does it mean? When my proctor was explaining it to me, I was thinking, you know, how do you explain that to people that haven't really had that kind of education? So what I decided was I was going to bring in one of my proctors that I have been talking about so many times, and she is so absolutely amazing. I'm just super excited for you guys to experience her presence and her knowledge. Welcome my co-host, Ema, my proctor, my beloved sister. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Michelle, for that really warm welcome. And I'd just like to say it is certainly an honor to be invited to your show. I've heard so many wonderful things about it, and I'm really excited to get to connect with you and your audience today.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and I'm sure everybody is going to be honored just by hearing your knowledge. I wanted to talk to you about this particular phrase, this as above, so below. And I was thinking about this, and I was trying to really understand what the meaning was behind as above, so below. Because like, if you take it literally and you think about it, most people are going to go, no, that's impossible because, you know, God and heaven and the angels are there. And here we are on earth, you know, struggling with all this pain and challenges and lessons. So what I wanted to do was get you, as the very, very knowledgeable teacher that you are, kind of explain it to my listeners as a way of understanding something that isn't understandable. I mean, even through all my studies, sometimes I question, I'm not like, how? I don't get it. So why don't you go ahead and what does it mean?
First and foremost, you know, when it comes to studying any mystery tradition, whether it be Hermeticism or something like Vedanta from India or the Chaldean mysteries, you know, when we're looking at the corpus of literature from those traditions, it's very difficult to understand, A, because it's usually written in a language we're unfamiliar with, or from a time where they spoke very differently. And their verbiage was different than we may use today. But there's a lot of heavy symbolism in Hermeticism, especially where the saying as above, so below comes from. It comes from something known as the Emerald Tablet of Hermes. And the beautiful aspect of the fact that it's expressed in symbolism is it means it can be accessible to anyone at any time throughout human history. So, you know, somebody who was studying those mystery traditions hundreds of years ago, seeing the same symbolism as somebody now, doesn't have to worry about a language barrier. However, that doesn't always necessarily make it any quote unquote easier, because we have to understand what that symbolism means. When it comes to studying the mystery traditions, I think the key point to understand is that everything that is presented to you in a form of symbol is attributed to something with respect to consciousness, whether that be human consciousness or divine consciousness or the various states of consciousness that may range in between the human and the divine. And even, you know, in some traditions, there's plant consciousness and animal consciousness. And the saying as above, so below is very indicative of that type of symbolism that's associated with consciousness. The way that I like to explain it to people
who aren't familiar with Hermeticism is to think about how, you know, we manifest things in our environment, whether knowingly or unknowingly. In the magical traditions, you know, this is referred to as projecting your will, and magicians of various traditions will learn, you know, very specific techniques that will purify and cultivate their consciousness to a point where they can control their projection of will and make things manifest in their external environment.
Are you saying that it already exists in another state, and because of that, it can be manifested in this reality? There's a common theme in the spiritual community that there's a belief structure that if you desire something or if you want something, that it already exists in a different reality. So all you have to do is align yourself with that reality or that dimension, and then it comes in your direction. So I'm just curious, are you talking about something like that?
That's actually a very good question. In my studies of various religious and spiritual traditions that have existed, you know, historically worldwide, there's a variety of different ways by which to express and explain the same concept. So there may be one person, for example, who considers the nature of reality to be similar to a quantum state of reality, where everything exists as a possibility until a choice is made, and then the result comes from that. But it's the choice that condenses everything into the experience that one has after they make the choice, or that there are a plethora of different realities occurring all at once, and that all you have to do is reach out and align yourself with the proper reality, and then it will manifest in your reality. Alternately, that consciousness in general, the divine consciousness, which is the, you know, the foundation of everything that's been created, and also the foundation of our human consciousness, is the realm of absolute potential. And if you dip into that realm by utilizing the proper formula through magical ritual or other techniques, that you actually formulate from that fundamental substrate of consciousness a new reality. So to me, these are all just different ways of describing the same concept, which is that there is unlimited potential that exists, and a person who is trained can very specifically bring something that is currently not in their conscious existence into conscious existence, and make it a reality.
Okay, so the answer is yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I love how you really broke that down though. And that's, to me, that makes a lot of sense. But I know that a lot of people are very, very, very beginners and learning. And so sometimes it's kind of difficult to really understand that. So what I'm hearing you say is that in the divine consciousness, it already exists. And with the proper tools or training or, you know, specific rituals, that we can bring that into this particular reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good way to phrase it.
Okay. So I didn't mean to cut you off on your explanation. So go back.
How excited you get.
I sidetracked you, but the reason I did that was because I know that people were probably going, huh, what? So I wanted to kind of jump in and say, hey, wait, let's address what you just said so they understand what you meant. Okay. So continue the as above, so below.
So I think we left off at the idea of consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe just to bring in a little bit of the side quest conversation we were having, if scientifically speaking, right, coming from a spiritual, scientific perspective, if The foundation of everything is divine consciousness, and divine consciousness is unlimited potential. Mm-hmm. And that means that we are creations or mirrors of the divine consciousness. And in some traditions, even, you know, human beings are considered to be the only creation that was made as a direct reflection of the divine, thereby imbuing us with special abilities to manifest things in the universe, because in those traditions, our purpose here, you know, as human beings, primarily is to be caretakers of God's creation. So we're given the ability and the opportunity to create and manifest only as the divine itself can create and manifest. And so going back to the idea of as above, so below, I also like to think about it by rephrasing it as within, so without. So what exists within our own microcosm, or what I like to phrase our internal landscape, our personal microcosmic consciousness, becomes reflected in our macrocosm, or what we experience on the outside. And if you've ever performed a magical ritual, for example, and you honed your energy and your willpower into one specific thing that you wanted to see happen and then watched it manifest, you have had a direct experience with how that works. And it doesn't work because you just said, yes, it's going to happen, and then it happens, right? It wasn't the command itself that made it happen. It was the transformation of your consciousness that made it happen.
Okay, so you just said something. The transformation of your consciousness. Explain that.
Okay, so let's take another example, right?
Okay.
So in the Golden Dawn system, which is a Western mystery tradition, a student of magic is taught, for example, how to work with certain elemental energies. So the element of earth, fire, water, etc. You also find this in various pagan traditions, Druidism, you know, where those traditions focus very specifically on earth magic and goddess magic. But the trend, right, in those magical traditions is that once you create and open up your magical circle, you imbibe or imbue or taint that circle with a particular energy. So let's say, for example, we're working with the element of earth, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we're doing a prosperity ritual. So you open up your circle, you perform some invocations, you imbue the energy of the circle with that earth energy. And then from there, maybe you make your request or your claim or your command, right? Mm-hmm. And then you follow that up with, you know, as it is desired, so shall it be, or so mote it be, or something to seal that ritual before you end it. Well, many people think that it's the raising of the energy and then making the claim that sends that energy forth into the universe that then somehow manifests that desire or request into manifestation. But the truth is that as you are existing in that circle with that energy doesn't just exist within that circle. It's now imbibing your own consciousness with that energy. So the vibration of your consciousness becomes aligned with the vibration of the energy that you have raised in the circle. Mm-hmm. And the claim that you make essentially is planting that seed of what you desire deep within your subconscious, which is a very powerful source of manifesting energy. We see this a lot in, you know, dream dream work, path working, et cetera, where we're accessing those finer, more delicate aspects of our human consciousness. So it is that transformation of consciousness that allows for the manifestation of the desire to actually occur, because it works within the formula as above, so below. So as above, so below isn't just a concept. It's also a formula that magicians apply towards making, you know, something happen. It could be manifesting something that you desire, or it could be, you know, utilizing those various energies that you're working with, for example, angelic hierarchies or planetary beings, you know, to transform your consciousness for personal enlightenment. So magic and mysticism can be used for a variety of things, but it's the manner by which it impacts your consciousness, which is the part of you that is connected to the divine, that allows things to manifest.
Well, it almost sounds like a claim. You know what I mean? So you're basically kind of like claiming that. Like my mom, she's a pretty, you know, strong Christian woman. And she says that in the Bible, that if you claim something, you got to claim it in the name of God. And so she does that. Like she claims, you know, something and boom, it happens. Like she's like this really strong prayer warrior. So it almost sounds to me like that's kind of what you're doing, is you're kind of, from what you're saying, is that you're sort of like pulling that energy down and claiming it. Am I saying this correctly? Because that's kind of the way that I'm interpreting what you're saying.
I certainly think that that's a way that you could describe it. You know, there's, I think, other ways that it can be described. None of them wrong. Just like in the earlier part of our conversation, you know, how people describe how it's even possible to manifest in the first place, right? Yes, you are claiming something. And the reason that claiming something becomes so powerful, at least from the perspective of somebody who's a hermeticist or you know, a mystically inclined person, is because of that fundamental idea that we are reflections of the divine. So being reflections of the divine, we have what is considered a kingship or an authority here, not just in the physical realm, but in the various realms of consciousness or energetic states that exist, because God created us to be his viceroys on, you know, within creation. Now, because of that, we've been given a great responsibility, right? So if you say the word authority and somebody takes it with respect to their ego and says, well, I have authority, so I'm just going to make anything I want happen. It's been demonstrated that that certainly can occur, especially if you have a very strong will. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't come with some backlash, right?
Right.
If you are performing magic that's not in accordance with your true will or the will of the divine or in harmony with what is meant to be, then you're going to suffer from the consequences of that, right? So a lot of people think about this in terms of like evil magic, right? Like if you curse somebody, whatever you do is going to come back to you threefold. So if you bless somebody, it's going to come back to you threefold. If you curse somebody, it's going to come back to you threefold. Whatever you put out comes back to you. And again, that returns to the formula as above, so below. If you're putting out curses, you're inviting curses, because in your state of consciousness, you're creating a curse mentality that you're projecting out to the universe. So you can't expect that that's not going to come back upon you at some point.
Wow. I love that. That's pretty interesting to me, because a lot of Wiccan traditions, they talk about that a lot. You know, things come back three times. What about just the average Joe. And they're just learning spirituality. They're kind of coming into this. And I get a lot of people who are interested in learning manifesting. And I've been teaching it way before I joined this esoteric order. And I have really good results with teaching it. But I do exactly kind of like what you're talking about. I won't teach it until we've done mindset work. And I'll put them, like if they're working with me privately, I put them through this whole process of getting in alignment, letting their soul, their spirit, their higher consciousness and their mind all in alignment. Because a lot of times, you know, they're going all different directions, their desires, their self-worth and all kinds of stuff is not in alignment. Like, they may want something, but they'll absolutely do the opposite and they'll self-sabotage. And they're creating this like destructive havoc in their life. And they don't realize how powerful they are and that they're creating this whole thing. Even if they're in pain and they don't want it and they have no idea how to control it. And it reminds me a lot of like, what is that show called? It's like they have these three sisters, The Power of Three. I forget what it's called. But these three sisters, when they first came into their power, they were witches and they were born into it. And when they first came into the power, it was out of control. Like it was just all over the place, you know? And one of them could move objects or freeze time. And every time she'd get upset, she'd and this firebomb would come out of her hand and things would break. And I know that's an extreme example, but to me, I kind of feel like that's what people are doing. Because they're just running around creating havoc from their subconscious and they don't realize how powerful that subconscious is looking at it from a science perspective. Your mind is an electrical current. And every time you think something, you're creating a current. Okay. And every time that you're thinking something with emotion, you're supercharging it. And so you're putting all this energy out there and it's like, and when people don't believe me, I say, okay, let me give you an example. Have you ever had somebody that was really angry with you and just out of the blue, they just come out and start screaming at you and you feel it like hit you in the chest, almost like an energy bolt and your heart starts racing, your blood pressure goes up. That's because they're projecting that energy at you. And so once people understand that they have that power, then so what I do is I clear it up and I create a space for something good to start happening. And when they're able to do that, that's when I start teaching them, because I'm not going to be responsible for teaching somebody how to destroy other people's lives. Right. So it's just interesting you saying that about the subconscious mind and how things come from that and how this all kind of like ends up happening. I mean, we're definitely manifesting every day of our life. We just don't realize the power that we actually have. I want to kind of divert a little bit. You were bringing up this stuff about keepers of the kingdom and where it's our responsibility and our authority. What does that exactly mean? Let's go back and address that, because you kind of like intrigued my interest there. I'm like, wait a second. I want to know more about that. Explain that to me, because the closest that I've even heard of anything like that was in the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And then they weren't in there anymore. So maybe we should kind of explore that for a second.
I think this is a very robust topic of conversation, because it can be approached from a variety of different perspectives, like so many things in the mystery traditions. Mm-hmm. You know, there is the Kabbalistic and also the Christian perspective that comes from the book of Genesis, attributed, you know, to both the Judaic and Christian traditions, where, you know, Adam was made by God to be his caretaker of the Garden of Eden. And that even when they were expelled from the Garden of Eden, it didn't take away their divinity, right? God made Adam in his image. And so even though Adam was asked to leave the house, so to speak, right, it's not like those skills were taken or even that that responsibility was taken away from him or his descendants. So the Kabbalistic traditions and many of the Christian faith denominations really pull a lot of their own personal power in their practices, whether they be mystical or prayer practices. Remember you saying your mother was a prayer warrior. They derive that from that particular aspect of the formula that was given in the book of Genesis. But this isn't a unique concept to Christianity or to Kabbalism. It has been reflected in a variety of other mystery traditions throughout the world for many, many ages. And so there's the aspect of being the caretaker of creation, right? And that could be, you know, to some people, that means, you know, something very tangible and direct. Like, it's my responsibility to take care of God's creation. So I'm going to live a green life. I'm going to be vegan. I'm going to tend to plants and animals and, you know, be an actual caretaker of this planet right here. But you could also look at it from the perspective of, you know, elevating the collective consciousness of human beings. There's a belief in many of the mystery traditions that, you know, we all have our individual state of consciousness or microcosmic state of consciousness, but humanity has a collective consciousness as well that we all exist in. And that as every single person becomes enlightened, it enlightens and elevates the collective consciousness, and that, you know, eventually at some point, all of humans will be enlightened and there will be no more reincarnation and we'll all live again in something akin to the Garden of Eden or in that divine unified consciousness again. So you could look at being caretakers of creation, you know, from the perspective of taking a personal responsibility to become spiritually enlightened. And then maybe even like the Buddha, come back to assist others to become spiritually enlightened. That could be a way to define that kingship as well. So, you know, there's a lot of breadth that can be taken with that. But the fundamental principle is that we are in essence divine. Our truest nature is a divine nature. And that gives us a responsibility that other aspects of creation, such as animals or plants, or even archangels and angels, don't have. They have their own responsibility. They were created in their own light through the divine to have their own purpose, whereas we were created as a fundamental essence of the divine or reflection of the divine, however you want to describe that. And so that gives us a greater responsibility. You know, like Uncle Ben said, with great power comes great responsibility.
Wow. You know, after you saying that, I kind of feel like we're doing a shit job.
Some people would agree with you, but, you know, I think to myself, I've thought about that a lot, especially when you think about the, you know, the many horrors that exist in the world. But the truth is when you live in a binary realm, which we do here in the physical realm, there's going to be as many blessings as there are curses. And I kind of, you know, on this topic really is you have the choice whether you want to live in a cursed existence or if you want to live in a blessed existence. And if you cultivate your consciousness to be blessed and to bless others, then that's the life you're going to live, right? If you think about, just think about people that you know, right? Mm-hmm. Think about people you know who are happy, who are fulfilled, who are leading satisfying lives. And it seems like it doesn't matter what they do, they become accomplished, almost just like the world unfolds in front of them, right? Mm-hmm. Talk to them and ask them, what's it like on the inside for you? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? you know, and watch how they behave and treat other people. You'll notice that those people who are living a blessed existence naturally are calmer on their interior. They think positively. They engage with other people positively, and they certainly don't bring into their sphere sensation or their, you know, their core group people who have what I refer to as a poverty mentality, because they understand that's infectious, right? They may be willing to reach out and help somebody, but they're not allowing people with a poverty mentality to, you know, be incorporated, you know, into their sphere. If you look at people who, it just seems like everything sucks all the time and they can never catch a break. And, you know, it's complain, 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 right? What's going on in them? Everything inside is chaos. They have no faith. They look at everything negatively. And if you take those two types of people and you present them with the same situation, one person, well, even if it could be defined as something that is bad, right? Like getting into a car accident or something of that nature, the blessed person is going to naturally be inclined to look at that for the silver lining. Well, what's the lesson here that I was meant to learn? Or what opportunities does this give me? Whereas other person is going to say, oh, woe is me. Everything sucks. See what happened to me again. Now, as a little homework for your viewers, go on YouTube and look up interviews with billionaires and listen to what they have to say. All of them have very similar fundamental qualities. They don't believe there's limitations to anything. They surround themselves with people who have prosperity mentalities, people who look for the opportunity in anything. Oh, they didn't get this job. That's okay. That means all these other opportunities have opened up for me. I don't have to pigeonhole myself over here. What else does that mean exists for me, right? They have that kind of mentality. Whereas people who are living lives, you know, where they feel tortured and unhappy and depressed all the time, never look for the opportunities and things. Even if something is given to them, they'll find a way to do things like self-sabotage, right? They manifest what is inside of them. And they believe that what's happening externally is being impressed upon them internally. It's called an external locus of control. Whereas the people who have the prosperity mentality work from what's known as an internal locus of control, which is I have control over myself, and what I want to make happen is going to happen, because even if it didn't happen in this way I thought it would, that means there's many different other avenues by which I can still make it happen. So they don't put limitations on themselves, and they certainly never look at anything as being derogatory or inhibiting to the future that they see for themselves.
Wow. That is really powerful. I did an interview with my mom when Carrie and I were doing the podcast. We interviewed my mom, and we did a show called The Power of Prayer. And my mom was talking about what you just said. It was so funny because she was talking about this car accident that she got into. And she said, you know, most people, when you get into a car accident, they're just, oh, you know, this is horrible, blah, blah, blah. She goes, but the guy that hit us, we started talking to him and we ended up becoming friends. And, you know, and we were like, and I ended up finding out he was a Christian and da, 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 you know. It was so funny because my mom ended up developing a friend, and she said, you know, God just puts us in his places so we can meet the most wonderful people. And it was really interesting how that ended up playing out. So I find that really kind of cool the way that you phrased it. And I feel like that you just kind of broke it down to where the person that is just beginning to open up that realm of spirituality or start working on themselves or trying to create happiness in their lives, they can understand. What I find is that's so interesting about what you just said is looking at the glass half full versus the glass half empty. I find that a large percentage of my clients, when they first come to me, they are half empty. And that's why we have to change the way that they think about themselves and alter that reality of projection that they're putting into the world. And it's funny that you said all this, because as you were saying, and I was thinking about my life, and I was thinking about how there was always these financial struggles. It seemed like I was borrowing Peter to pay Paul. It seemed like there was always this bad luck that hit me. I couldn't seem to ever get ahead. And when I decided that I was going to let go of that mindset and I was going to pull myself out of it and start focusing on all possibilities exist, I can create this. I'm going to move into this space. And that's when everything started altering. It was like, I'm going to create this. And then I did. I'm going to look at every single thing that happens to me as a lesson. I'm going to ask myself, what did I need to learn from this? What do I need to overcome? Why is this being shown to me? I think that a lot of people, what happens is that they see something happening in their life and they start, you know, something that triggers them. And I was just having a conversation with a client of mine today about this. And I said, you know, so somebody comes over and they leave their shoes out right here. And you say, and you get really upset with them because you've told them not to leave their shoes out. And so you're pointing that arrow in that direction. But when that arrow of what's been triggered, that trigger is pointing an arrow in that direction, but that doesn't mean that it's about that person. It's about somehow or another in your childhood, you got in trouble for leaving your shoes out or something. And so what's happening is there's this internal subconscious reaction to that particular thing. And that energy is being pointed in that direction for you to look at. So you can reflect on yourself and say, what is it inside of me that I need to release? Because it's not happening now. Nobody's punishing you. Nobody's getting angry with you. And so it's time now for you to kind of clear out that space so that you can make room for the good things that can come into your life. And so I just want to tell you, thank you for saying all that. I mean, that was really quite a profound explanation.
Yeah, you know, I know you didn't bring this up specifically. I think that this is something important for your listeners to hear, which is the idea not only of conditioning, which is what you were bringing up, right? How people become conditioned maybe by a traumatic event or something like that, but also the idea of how what I've been referring to as the poverty mentality gets mm-hmm. passed down as a legacy from generation to generation. And I had a very blessed set of life events from when I was a child into where I am now, where I got to really see how that works, because I grew up in a very poor family. And, you know, when I would come to my family and say, hey, I would like to learn how to play the violin. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't afford it. Well, I'm interested in science and math. Can you help me with my math homework? Oh, no, you know, we don't know how to do that. And well, you're either just born to be good at math and science or you're not. Clearly, you're not. You weren't born that way. So you'll have to find something different. And that's how I grew up, right? And I had don't get me wrong, I had a very loving family. Some folks in my family that were pretty toxic. But in general, you know, I had, like, my grandparents were very supportive and sweet, but they didn't realize that they had that poverty mentality that had kind of been impressed upon them, right? You stay in your place. You're born to be good at something or you're not. If you're not, you go do something else, right? And people get conditioned to believe that they can't branch out, that they can't seek more, that they don't deserve more, whether that's love or money or a career. And when I got out of high school, I ended up going to get a degree in psychology because I was interested in things like the study of human consciousness, but I also just wanted to be in something that was science. But since I was told I'm not good at math, I didn't feel like I could get into the hard sciences, right? So I got into psychology. But then through that, I made my way into working in a laboratory and, you know, started gaining confidence, you know, in myself and came to realize, you know what? There's probably a whole lot more I can do and achieve in life outside of the box I put myself in if I'm willing to put the time and energy and effort into it. And so, you know, I ended up pursuing a PhD in biomedical engineering. And that was just an incredible experience for so many different reasons. And one of the reasons is that I started to have access to people who didn't have a poverty mentality. It wasn't in academia and in white collar industries. You know, people don't teach their kids the same things that I learned. You know, they teach their kids concepts like, oh, honey, you didn't get into that school. Well, what are your other options? You know, rather than, oh, well, that, you know, that sucks. You didn't get into the school you really wanted to. I guess you're going to have to go to a community college, right? Those are real conversations that happen in people's lives. One person is told, well, you didn't get into the college you wanted to, so now you better downgrade, you know, downgrade your hopes and dreams to something, you know, less. Although I'll just say for the record, there's many amazing community colleges out there, so it's not actually a lesser option. But that's what people are made to believe.
Yeah, they're made to believe that, right.
Yeah, there's a stigma associated with it, right? Whereas the other child, the response is, oh, you didn't get into that school you wanted. Let's look at the other options, right? Just the word options means the door isn't shut for you. And when you consider, you know, your other options, well, all these little worlds start opening up for you. Well, hey, well, if I go to this school, then these are my options. And if I go to that school, these are my options, right? And a whole new subset of different futures is opened up for somebody that has options, right? That's how I came to really realize when I was going to grad school and getting my PhD, you know, that people are conditioned to have a poverty mentality, which to me is a mentality where you stick yourself into a box and you don't believe you can achieve anything more, or that you don't deserve anything more, or that you're just not worthwhile to gain more, versus people who, you know, are told, okay, look, you know, you made a mistake. Let's learn from that mistake. Failure isn't failure. Failure is an opportunity to learn something and better yourself so you can come back and do even more, right? When you start thinking about everything in life as a building opportunity for you, then you start to really transform how you think about life and what you can do and what you can achieve. And you do start to see that there really aren't boundaries, you know?
No, there's no boundaries. And, you know, I was told when I first started my business, they basically told me it was stupid, like by everybody. They were like, can you make a living at that? And, you know, are you going to get a real job? And how are you going to survive? And how much longer are you going to do this before you actually start working again? And somebody asked me what would happen if I failed. And I said, I don't have a choice. I have to make this work. And I was gung-ho about it. Like, there was no other option for me because I believed wholeheartedly I needed to move in this direction. I have a question about what you just said. So you were talking about this as, you know, these beliefs and these limitations that we put upon ourselves. So kind of moving in a different direction. Do you find that that's true with spiritual gifts? Like, are people just born gifted? And some people are just very academically minded and they're never going to acquire those gifts? Or do we all have the ability to tune into that state. And the reason I'm asking you is because a friend of mine and I were having this conversation yesterday. I personally have worked with highly intelligent people that have wanted to develop that gift, and I've trained them into it. And I remember one client of mine, literally like after a year of working with her, she was just crying her eyes out, like, it's never going to happen. And now it's happening. And so I do believe personally that if you have the will to do it, but I was just kind of curious, like what your thoughts were about it. Do you find that's true for spiritual gifts as well?
First, I'd like to say, this is not a belief I have. This is something that I know to be true.
Okay.
Everybody has the innate ability to cultivate spiritual gifts. And yes, some people are born, you know, with more aptitude, right? In fact, you know, what I've seen is most people are born with an aptitude. It's just many people are conditioned out of it when they're a kid. They're told, no, that's all in your head. It's fake. You're making up stories. You don't have a imaginary friend. You can't hear things, you know? And so we get conditioned and shut down towards that. Now, this is why I know that this is a fact, okay?
Okay.
So let's think about somebody who smokes cigarettes, right? Mm-hmm. The average smoker smokes a pack a day. A pack a day has 20 cigarettes in it. It probably takes approximately 10 hits off that cigarette before you finish it. Mm-hmm. So that's 200 times a day you're bringing your hand to your mouth to puff on a cigarette. Now, every single time you take an action, you create a neural connection in your brain. That's a physical connection. If you do that action enough times, you create what's called a neural bundle. And this is one of the reasons why it's so hard for people to quit smoking, because they're fighting against a literal physical mass of neurons that have been densely populating in their brain for years and years and years, usually, right? Most people don't just start smoking and then quit smoking in like 6 months. They usually smoke 10, 20 plus years, right? So that's like there's a physical mass you have to fight against, and it has to atrophy over time for you to really kick that habit, which is why people who've stopped smoking 20 years still feel inclined to smoke when certain things trigger them, right? Because that still exists to some degree in their mind. So bringing it back now to the spiritual gifts, right? And also, I'm going to pull in a previous part of our conversation where we're talking about opening up the circle and enhancing the circle with that energy, and it transforms your consciousness. So if you are doing that on a regular basis, you're meditating, or you're invoking a certain energy, whether it's an angelic energy or an elemental energy, or working with particular deities on a consistent basis, you are formulating a new neural connection every single time that you do it. When you do it enough, you formulate a neural bundle. As you continue to have experience with these different energies over time, your brain opens up. It's just like kids learning foreign languages, right? They say kids, you should teach foreign languages to children very early on, because if they don't hear those different tones, the brain actually atrophies to that sensation because it doesn't need it, right? And our human form is built for efficiency. If you don't use it, you lose it. If you don't need it, you won't perceive it. But if you start working with it, you start opening it up again, right? So yes, we're all born with the ability to have spiritual experiences, gain spiritual powers, manifest things. It's just sometimes you have to put in the practice. And, you know, in modern society, people are impatient, right? We can have anything, literally the click of a button. I can go onto Amazon right now, order something. It's going to be here in 2 days. I can go on my DoorDash app. I can have dinner here in 30 minutes. I don't have to cook anything. I don't have to wait for anything. So we don't have patience. So, you know, the idea of sitting in meditation for an hour a day for 6 months or a year or 3 years, right, is like appalling to some people. Why would I do that? Especially if you don't see immediate benefits. Mm-hmm. But I just say to them, well, if you decide you want to lose 20 pounds and you go to the gym and you don't lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks, are you going to come back home and say, oh, well, I can't lose weight? Yeah, you can lose weight. It's just you need to put a little bit more time into it, right? So it all just comes down to understanding that any skill you want to cultivate in life is going to come with having to invest time and energy. And if you're an individual that doesn't feel you have a natural inclination, that doesn't keep you out. In fact, I found that many people who aren't naturally inclined towards something like mathematics, right? If they practice it over and over and over again consistently, often become far better than the person who did have a natural aptitude for mathematics. Because when something comes to you naturally, it's easy to take it for granted, right? But if it doesn't, and you put a lot of time and energy into it, that means you're practicing it more. So, you know, to summarize, if you're somebody who's really good at math and you put in 10 hours a week into your math homework versus somebody who starts out not being very good at math that puts in 20 hours a week into their math homework and they're doing this for 5 years, each of them, the person who's putting in 20 hours a week at the end of 5 years is going to be far better at math than the person for whom it seemed to be a natural gift because they're constantly reinforcing it. They're opening their mind to the abstract concepts of math. They're practicing it and they're learning those higher concepts. Whereas the other person is just like, oh yeah, I get it, but they might get it, but do they get it?
Yeah, that's the question, right? Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting. I mean, so many things are going through my head right now while you're saying that. So I'm going to kind of go back to the thing about the neural bundles. Okay, so I can understand logically about creating a neural bundle and neural pathways. I get it. I studied all that stuff. I understand it. I talk about that all the time. And I understand that for when it comes to habits or just the habit of yourself and your own personal negativity and these structures and rhythms that you create that you get into the habit of, that's hard to break. However, it's interesting that you brought that up in spirituality. And I have a lot of questions around that. So creating a neural bundle to making that connection is basically what you're doing is you're learning how to do something automatically so that you don't have to think about it. Is that what you're saying? Well, the reason I'm asking is because, hold on, let me clarify my question a little bit. The reason I'm asking is because I have found that over the last few years that I can be sitting with a client and suddenly the answer to something comes to me and it's something I've never heard before, something I've never done before. And sometimes it's a spiritual thing, you know, it's like, oh, do this exercise or do this type of thing. And I'll just create something out of the, you know, I'll see it playing out in my head and it just sort of almost like a download comes to me. And people have said to me that, well, you just have this natural ability. Well, I practice all the time. I've been practicing for years and I'm very in tune to that. And what I did was I let go and stopped judging myself or questioning, is this working? Is this blah, blah, blah? Am I full of shit? Am I making this stuff up? Am I an imposter? All of those things. I kind of like set it all aside and decided to become in sync with that energy. And so doing it enough so frequently that has created is what you're saying. It's created that neural bundle. I just didn't know that a neural bundle could be spiritual. And I never really thought of that. So it's interesting because I think of neural bundle as the way the brain is working. But you're saying It's like if you're creating a habit of knowing how to get there, it's like you've driven that road over and over again to where you automatically know how to make that connection, like without even thinking about it. And I'm guessing that's what you're trying to say, right?
To some degree, yes. So I'll just clarify. When I'm talking about the formation of neural bundles, really the greater concept I'm speaking to is the idea of remodeling the brain, right? So, you know, our brain is a very unique and intricate organ in our body. Nothing else in our body works like it, is built like it, and it is the central processing unit for everything physically speaking, but it's also the receptor for everything else, right? So we think about our senses in terms of the five senses, you know, hearing, taste, smell, etc. But we have far more senses that we have access to, such as our intuition, or the ability to tap into that greater macrocosmic divine consciousness and, you know, quote unquote, download information that exists. If you read some of the spiritual texts of the various mystical traditions, for example, the Yoga Sutras, there's a whole chapter of the Yoga Sutras. It's the fourth chapter, actually, that talks about how as a person becomes enlightened, right, and their consciousness becomes, their microcosmic consciousness becomes more attuned to the macrocosmic consciousness, a human being will naturally develop what are known to be extrasensory abilities, like walking through walls, levitating, flying, manifesting things out of thin air, right? And in those traditions, they don't consider that to be weird. They just consider that to be a natural occurrence that happens when your brain and your consciousness no longer perceive boundaries. So we have so many boundaries that we create within ourselves, whether they be belief systems or constructs, the conditioning that's been placed on us. You know, there's a myriad of cages that we put ourselves in knowingly and unknowingly. But as you break free from those cages, or as they describe it in the Vedas, you remove the veils, right? Then everything becomes possible, because nothing is impossible for you when there's no boundaries, right? If, you know, somebody said to me, was telling me about a dream they had one time about, you know, opening up a retreat center. And they said, oh, you know, I think I might need to get $2 million for that. How am I going to get $2 million for that? And I said, girl, you're the queen of manifestation. You're going to sit here and even say that to me, because I know you don't believe in boundaries. Even saying that to yourself puts boundaries on you, right? People mentally and emotionally abuse themselves every single day without realizing it, just by putting boundaries on themselves. And yeah, it's hard when you have been living, you know, your life, thinking about things in a certain way, believing they can't be any other way. You know, the idea of putting yourself out there to start telling yourself, okay, boundaries don't exist, infinite possibilities around, right? Because it's a big leap of faith that you have to take. But, you know, there's the saying, fake it till you make it. If you reinforce that idea every single day in your mind, then you start seeing it. When you start seeing it, then you start believing it. When you believe it, then it becomes a fundamental aspect of yourself. And yes, it doesn't happen overnight, usually. It happens with time. But just put a little patience into it, And over time, you'll see it. And it's mind blowing. It's mind blowing when you get to the point in your life where you finally realize there is no spoon. Like,
I'm going to tell you, I have seen the most craziest things happen. I've literally like manifested like $20,000 in 2 hours. I mean, and you're right. And by the way, I know that was me. So I'm going to own it.
I'll call you out like that.
Okay. I don't mind. I call myself out all the time. I want people to know that I am human. I make mistakes and I'm growing. And part of the reason I do this podcast is because I want them to understand is that as I grow, I teach, and that's, you know, we're all learning together. Yes, I was the person who said that. I wanted to open up a retreat center, but it's going to cost X amount of dollars. And I was like, you know, yeah, that was a limiting space for me, but you opened my eyes to understand that blessings are meant for us. We aren't meant to suffer like this. We're meant to grow. We're meant to learn, and we're meant to receive these blessings. And there are no limitations. The only limitations we put on ourselves and, or that others put on us. And as long as we're believing what other people say, or we're defining ourselves by other people's definitions or how they feel about us, then we're kind of screwed. You know, we have to realize that we are born powerful beings, and it's only through life that that changes that belief structure. And so anything that can be programmed can be unprogrammed. And
right. Don't let haters keep you from your crown.
That's right. I love that. I'm going to use that. Don't let haters keep you from your crown. I love it. I love it. You know, and so kind of coming back to this whole reason for this podcast, this has been really interesting, is the as above, so below. The basic understanding of this is everything that is in the higher consciousness is available for us, and it can come to us in this space. And every single person that decides to make that commitment to do their studies, to practice their practices, to connect with God, to connect with the divine, to commune with our higher angels, all of those things are there for us for our own benefit and our own development. And that's the purpose of it. We are supposed to grow and learn, and we are the keepers of this kingdom. And that kingdom is within ourselves and within our communities and on this beautiful earth. So with that being said, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me in this podcast. And I know that every single person is probably going to get a lot out of this. You said some really powerful things that are really memorable that you're going to want to probably re-listen to this over and over again. Anyways, thank you so much, Ema, for joining us. And I really appreciate this. This has been awesome.
Well, it's certainly been my pleasure. And as always, I appreciate the enlightening conversation with you.
Oh, you're the best. I love you so much. I will see you guys in the next podcast. Hi, this is Michelle, and I want to take this opportunity to thank you for engaging in this podcast and taking this journey with us where we are raising your consciousness. Make sure that you follow us on Instagram and on Facebook so that you can actually engage with us, ask us questions, offer some suggestions, or anything that you would be willing to, you know, throw out there for us. We want to engage with our public. We look forward to hearing back from you and starting this journey. See you next time.